If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today, we're into Arya 12, Tyrion.
Yeah, I literally was updating it. Matt,
I actually knew it was wrong, but I wanted to see if we could shame you live on the podcast. You were updating the doc as I read. So it's Tyrion 9 of A Storm of Swords. Matt, how are you? Are you discombobulated? Is that what this is?
Yeah, dude, I got like a pinched nerve in my neck. It's all jacked up, dude. I don't even know what I did yesterday. Like, I was like trying to think, did I even eat yesterday? I can't remember because I was like, I couldn't move my neck. I've seen Cairo, everything. I'm feeling better today, you know.
Shout out to the heart.
Heart's fine. I've been good there. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So shout out to Dr. Corinne, my chiropractor. Well, I have multiple chiropractors. I see her specially, but she just worked on it.
Is this the one that's a big fan of the show?
No, that's my other chiropractor, Jordan, who I see all the time.
Well, if he hears that?
Well, I mean,
Jordan, we're sorry.
He's good. I see him like 20 times. I see him like about
not
like,
good enough, apparently.
No, he is good. It does help. I get an adjustment when I get my neck adjusted, which I get about every time. It's always like that day and like next day, I'm usually pretty sore.
So why didn't you go to him?
Because Teresa made an appointment with Dr. Cran, and she's like, she doesn't like him in like an office where you take like the whole fam. It's like a whole family.
So she doesn't like him.
She doesn't. Teresa sees Jordan too.
So she decided he wasn't good enough this time.
No, it's because Dr. Crenzo is like a family friend at this point. I mean, you know.
Well, I mean, a fan of the show, I would say is a family friend, but I guess you and
she
I
did
have
baby
worlds.
Chiropractor, and we took Ellie there.
Oh, okay.
And Ellie was like, really? So that's so. And then she.
You like, don't trust him with the child.
He doesn't do baby. He doesn't do babies.
Okay. Stuff. Yeah. Mm, so. That's a red flag.
That's more his place is more like a rack'em and crack'em type of place.
You're just churning them out.
Oh, dude, I go in. It's like 15 minutes. Like crack, crack. How you doing? Oh, sweet.
It's a puppy mill for spines. Just getting
right. It's also like next door, and she, her place is also like much further out. It's like in Portland. So I have to like.
Oh. Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, I tried to sow some, you know, dissent in the home camp, but I think I failed.
Nah, you failed. How you doing, man? How's everything going?
You know, I'm just
hanging in there.
Yeah, dude, the weather change sucks. I hate it.
This week, fall back.
Yeah, dude, it's time. It's time to start hermiting. I'm already picking out the video games. I only really play a lot of video games during the winter because I can't get outside. So I'm trying to like curate the catalog and get kind of excited just to give myself something to look forward to. Cause these next, you know, 3-4 months are just brutal for me.
What are you going to play? Have you finished Cyberpunk yet? I'm just about done with it now.
I mean, I played like 60 hours when it first came out, never finished it. I mean, eventually I would like to, but the ones I'm definitely going to do, Outer Worlds 2 just came out. I'm really big fan of the story and the writing of that game. Death Stranding 2, Metal Gear Solid 3 remake, and then definitely going to finish Expedition 33 and probably Final Fantasy 7 remake 2 or whatever the hell.
Yeah.
The
second one. Claire Expedition, I got a little further into it, and I will say I will agree with you. It is a fantastic.
It's so good.
Actually, I have it here in front of me, another like retro handheld thing.
You go through those like I go through toilet paper.
Well, dude, yeah. So this one though, so I had the this one has got an OLED screen and everything.
This is the one.
No, well, they just get better all the time. But anyway,
hey, there's nothing wrong with having gadgets. I think that's fun.
I also upgraded my internet even more a few months ago or whatever, because my plan was running out, and then they're like, oh well, I had like 600 megs, now I have like one.
Oh, you have a data cap?
No.
Oh, okay.
600 megs a second.
Oh, okay.
Which
okay.
was more than enough for YouTube and everything. But now, like, game streaming is like flawless. Like, I do. Yeah. So anyway, so there's like an Android app where you can do like turn this into like a PS remote play thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was gonna buy the Portal. It's where you can play.
Yeah, they're cool. Yeah.
Yeah, but you can get it on Android. So I was like, all right, well, let me get something like this, and now I can do Steam Link, and so I can do Steam Link on this as well. And so, I've been playing Clair Expedition on this, like. Even though I have an ROG Ally, which is a handheld, you know, it's like the Steam Deck, but it's attached to a big 4090 graphics card. So it's like a desktop. I don't really play it handheld very much. But
well, you'll be able to play the new Westeros game, the War of Westeros.
When it comes out. Yeah, there's no news on that or anything.
2026.
But I think I might be willing to try King's Road again. Give it the Game of Thrones King Road.
Give it a shot, you know. We already burned that bridge. We ain't coming back.
We did burn the bridge, but Warbos is about to get bought out again.
Oh, I don't know if you see who the front bidder is right now for HBO, and
they change it every week. Like literally, I've heard Paramount, I've heard Netflix, I've heard Amazon, I've heard Apple.
I think it's gonna be Netflix. I think Netflix.
I'd be fine with Netflix.
Yeah, when you look at Netflix's like strategy, especially early on, they always mentioned HBO. Mm-hmm. They have like an affinity, which everyone should, for great television. I'm gonna be on. So I hate to be a dude. I feel like I'm always the dude. Like,
I hope Apple does it. To be fair,
I know I'm always the guy giving out the bad scenarios, but I think we might be in the final breaths of HBO as we knew it. Like I think it's.
Oh, I agree.
I think it's. We're going to talk to our kids, grandkids about HBO, and they're gonna be like, oh, that weird thing that's on the Netflix for you tab that I see. Right. You know what I mean? Like it's just going to be like
our American American Turner classics, whatever. Yeah.
We'll be doing Tony Soprano impersonations in our wheelchairs.
Yeah.
I saw a meme the other day where someone was explaining the Battle of the Bastards by it being Chris and Tony. It was so funny.
So ridiculous.
What do you mean he has dogs? It's so funny, dude. Goatee. Jon Snow's a bastard. You see,
that's like The Sopranos is like all my TikTok feed. It's like Curb Your Enthusiasm and The Sopranos. It's like pretty much I'm just rewatching clips of The Sopranos.
That's why
like
we're friends, Matt. That's why we're friends. That's all I want in my life.
Great. You know what I think I might watch. I've never seen it, but I've seen so many clips of it at this point. I feel like I should watch it. It's Yellowstone.
Nah,
is it good?
No, I'm out. I tried it. I didn't like it.
You didn't like it?
No. I understand the appeal. I'm not going to like crap on it, but I don't think you will make it past like maybe season one. It there's a lot of like, you know, drama to it, yeah. But I don't know. There's something about the way it's shot and the way that it's like the pacing of it that I just don't like it.
Yeah, because I see so many clips of it. I'm like, oh, I mean, I've seen the ending, so I know how it ends. So it's like, maybe what? I'll get
it. You've already seen the ending and you want to watch it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It looks good.
There's some people out there like that. I'm not.
But a lot of times you see clips of shows and you think, oh, it's going to be good. Like House. Like I saw a lot of House clips and I was like, maybe I should watch it. And then I like tried getting through. Like I was like, this is kind of okay. It's like one of those where it has like has good moments, but sometimes when you see a TikTok clip of something, it's like, oh, just that moment is good.
Yeah, you got like I got it. I got the idea.
Yeah.
Gosh. That's
brilliant. But it might be too big of a universe too. There's like three prequels and
yeah, and like wasn't there a big fallout between the cast and the producer or
yeah,
something?
So it kind of in a way, I think Kevin Costner didn't want anything to do with the final season or something, so he's not in it. And then it kind of is almost like House of Cards, you know, Kevin Spacey. He had all that stuff cut down. So like House of Cards final season was like total up to
that show has one of the best moments of TV.
Like House of Cards seasons 1 through 4 was
unbelievable.
Like unbelievable. I mean it broke Netflix. I mean it was like at the time, like I mean it was like I think it was going to be like the Game of Thrones because it came out. I think it came out before Game of Thrones, right? It was like
no,
it was right at the same time. You sure? House of Cards?
I think it came out in like 2012. I know Kevin Spacey sucks. I think, you know, he seems kind of like a
no, you're right. 2013. Yeah. So, but Game of Thrones had only had like season one or two at that point. So
yeah, we were entering in what I would consider the prime of like streaming television. Yeah. House of Cards is absolutely one of those shows. And, you know, for all the
things, even its second to last season, it was starting to go off the rails a little bit.
I actually stopped, I think, one or two seasons before the final season, because I already kind of know what happens as far as like him being ejected from the show. But right. I also thought that it went too long. It like everything nowadays. But his performance in that is, I mean, he's a phenomenal actor. Oh, you can't say he's not.
So. Right. All right. Well, any news or anything before we get started?
George won his, or I should say he's advancing his lawsuit against ChatGPT for stealing his books and his copyright material. Basically, OpenAI tried to throw it out, and the judge says, nope, this is super duper valid. And I don't know what the next steps or if there's a resolution, but it seems like this is going to be a pretty big story going forward for copyright law.
Yeah.
And AI and large language models. I can kind of understand, like, if my story was popping up or if someone finished my series for me on ChatGPT, I would think that that's kind of like BS. I'd be pissed. So I get it.
Yeah.
Just a lot of
mixed feelings about it.
There's a lot of borrowed material in that. And
technically speaking, everything we use is like,
sure. But yeah. If someone were profiting billions of dollars off of like you and I's content, like you would be like, what is this? Like you'd be pissed, right?
I don't know, because technically
you wouldn't care.
You're
going to say no to be a contrarian right now. I know you are.
No, because I've had people push back on stuff like but almost every YouTuber or any content creator who creates anything inside of a fandom, at the end of the day, like
we're making content about someone else's content. Yes.
Yeah. And so, because I've had people be like, well, like you're stealing this or you're stealing that or whatever. It's like, so did they, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
Like when it comes to like artwork and stuff like that. And it's like, how's come you don't give credit to every single piece of, you know, like how's come you don't give credit to every piece of artwork you find in your YouTube videos?
Try to.
But like that, but that's stealing other people's arts. And it's like, if you make fan art, I mean, by definition, you are stealing if I make fan art about, well, technically Mickey Mouse to some degree is now
public. Yeah.
But only like the original versions, that like Batman, for example. Yeah, Batman becomes public domain, like the very early Batman becomes public domain in like 10 years.
Right.
And you know somebody's gonna make a Batman movie based off of like that original,
sure, yeah,
whatever. But like the Batman as we know it today will not be public domain in our lifetime.
Yeah, that's why they change it
exactly
so often and whatnot. Yeah, I don't know how I feel. I definitely think giving like credit where credit's due is always a good idea.
Sure, when you can. Absolutely. That doesn't mean you, yeah.
Also depends on how you acquired it. Like one of the problems that I saw in the One Piece community, and I didn't know this until after I'd made a couple thumbnails, is that some people would actually pay for commissioned art and people would steal it and then upload it to the internet. So it would come up in a Google search and you think, oh, this is just a One Piece thing, but it actually was commissioned art that another person paid for, which is, in my opinion, very messed up. I would be mad.
I'll disagree with you.
I don't know, Matt. If me and you commissioned a bunch of custom art for our show.
That's all this banner is custom artwork that I commissioned.
So you wouldn't care if they started a channel and they just started using this stuff. You wouldn't mind.
I mean, I wouldn't like it, but at the end of the day, like, okay, so like the lion and the wolf. Okay, that's still just kind of a lion and the wolf. The stag, however, is in front of a golden shield, which makes it like pretty
Baratheon. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like,
if somebody took that and used it, like at the end of the day, like I'm using Warner Brothers and George's like idea and art and everything. So if somebody were to steal it, air quote steal it, like just I mean. I wouldn't like it, but I don't think I would try to sue them.
I mean, there is a like kind of a murky legality of what we're doing with these icons, actually. I kind of ran into this with the other podcast I was on, and that is that
like
you can make art,
right?
But if you then use that art from copyrighted material to make money, then that's where you can get into some trouble. So in theory, we could be in trouble, Matt.
Well, let's not say these things, because if we ever have to sit in front of a lawyer and they'll reference back to this episode. <be like,
laughs> Yeah, I might have just.
But even your book channel, I mean, that's the whole deal. That's where fair use comes in, and there's definitely a difference.
Wait, what about my book channel, Matt?
You put I mean, that's why fair use exists and freedom of speech, as long as it still exists.
You know. I don't know. I cheered George on intellectual property. I mean,
I do too. I would say what OpenAI is doing. I will agree with you. Is definitely like when I go on there to make thumbnails, I'm like, hey, give me this, and it'll sometimes be like, well, this is too copyright. I'm like, okay. And then sometimes, but then there's times where I've asked it for something that is like, I'm like, give me an original character. And like for the thumbnail for this episode, I was like, oh, I need something that's like Oberyn Martell, but I want more of like a book like description. And it straight up gave me Pedro Pascal. And I was like, now, if I had asked for that, you would have not given me that.
Yeah.
And I was like, I actually don't want that. And it kept giving me Pedro Pascal. And I'm like, this isn't what I want.
You just described me having to use AI at work.
Yeah,
it's all day long. I'm fighting it, and I'm just like, why do I have to use this?
Yeah, it sucks. It's not nearly as good as they make it out to be.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, let's dive in to today's chapter, which is Tyrion 9. So Tyrion Lannister is imprisoned in a tower cell of the Red Keep. His uncle Kevin tells him that Tywin, Mace Tyrell, and Oberyn Martell will stand in judgment of him. When Tyrion claims he may demand trial by combat, his uncle replies that Cersei will name Gregor Clegane as her champion. Tyrion sends for Bronn, but finds his former sellsword to be a changed man, soon to marry Lawless Stokeworth, and now being paid well by the queen. The mercenary leaves Tyrion to fend for himself, unwilling to stand for the dwarf against the mountain. At the trial, Tyrion declares his innocence, but claims that Sansa was not responsible either. The witnesses that Cersei has brought forth are numerous, and since Tyrion has no witness of their own, their word is without refute. Pycelle notes that Tyrion stole poisons from his solar, and Tyanna Merryweather claims to have seen Tyrion drop something into the king's wine. That night, Kevin tells Tyrion that his only hope is to admit his guilt and he will be permitted to take the Black. Though Tyrion remembering what happened to the last man may be such an he remembers what happened to the last man to be made such an offer. They talk about Tyrion's father. Kevin is fiercely loyal to his brother, for it was Tywin who made the Lannisters' enemies pay for their abuse of their father, Tytos Lannister, who was a peaceful but weak man. The next morning, Varys nearly seals Tyrion's fate with damaging evidence against the dwarf. Later, Oberyn Martell visits Tyrion and makes it clear that Cersei has tried to buy his vote in the judgment, mentioning marriage, but the Red Viper has other ideas, and even brings up the point that according to Dornish law, Marcella is the heir, and that his brother may well crown his ward. Oberyn relates the story Tywin had told him, that it was Armory Lorch who killed Elia and her children, but Tyrion tells him the truth, that Lorch only killed Rhaenys, and it was the Mountain who killed Aegon and raped and murdered Elia. The Red Viper speaks of saving Tyrion not as his judge, but as his champion. So a lot of things to bring up from this chapter. One of, if not the coolest, like, moments in the show, I think, like when Oberyn Martell steps up and is like, hey, I'll be your champion. Mm-hmm. Such an amazing moment. Of course, we get more Oberyn in the show, right? Like, we get his conversations with Tywin Lannister and everything. And of course, Pedro Pascal. This was when he was really kind of like turning into his mega star that he has obviously become today. I would say Game of Thrones and the Narcos, great show, by the way. Speaking of Netflix shows, Narcos, fantastic, and he was in that. Obviously the trial itself, I think a little bit cooler in the show, maybe a little more dramatic in the show than it is here in the book. But now we're gonna go into the Oberyn Martell arc and some other kind of pieces to pull from this. One, you have Varys, like, in a way, sealing Tyrion's fate. But Varys, as we know, has other plans for Tyrion, where he's still ultimately going to try to get him out. Marcella being named, potentially being named the heir in Dorne, and going that route. That's a big difference. And we've talked about before the fact that Marcella may be she may not die like she does in the show. And that could change. And some people think she is going to be the younger, more beautiful queen that's going to take Cersei down.
That would be crazy. Yeah.
It could happen.
It's a wild card. Yeah. A lot of possibilities with her.
Yeah. So what are you thinking, Jimmy?
Just about the chapter in general?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, dude. If you want to know why, like, this series is so successful, you could actually just look at this chapter. This chapter is all about justice. It's all about retribution, truth, and lies. We see all of those things here in this chapter, but think about how many threads have led to this point. Pycelle testifying against Tyrion to get retribution for what Tyrion did to him and locking him down into the cells. Oberyn Martell going after possibly retribution. He's going for that vengeance, hoping to serve his justice. And then, of course, you have Tyrion and his entire messy relationship with his father. You have Varys coming out and kind of throwing a curveball, who we thought to be Tyrion's friend all along. And now you're starting to wonder exactly what he's up to. You have Kevin Lannister, who seems to be the most level-headed Lannister outside of Tyrion here. And we're even hearing about the ramifications of Tyrion being treated like a weak-willed man. And it's just all of these threads that we've learned up to this point. These aren't like fresh things that have been invented. This is stuff that he has set up over books and an imaginary history that people end up relaying to us as we read. You can't really think of a time in the books, I think, where the drama is this heavily mounted. And you're kind of waiting for the top to blow off of this thing. Not to mention, you know, as a fantasy fan, very obvious that the fantasy expectation reading this in 2003. Yeah. The expectation would be that Oberyn becomes Tyrion's champion, Tyrion is saved, all is good. And we know that that is obviously not going to be the case. I think one thing we should really pay attention to here, though, is that Tyrion is being punished for telling the truth. He could have easily lied and said that it was all Sansa, and that I think he probably would have skated free. And there'd probably been a big manhunt or girl hunt for Sansa, but he tells the truth while everyone around him is lying. And how does Tyrion's arc end in this book? With a lie. He lies to Jaime. So I think the falsehoods and the truths are kind of like the core theme of this chapter. Obviously justice too, but
right.
It's fascinating to think that Tyrion is just sitting here just telling the truth. It does not matter.
Yeah. And remember that this is kind of a two-part chapter, because the next chapter is, like, I think the famous part of Tyrion's trial, right? Where Shae comes in and he's like, I demand a trial by combat. And then that chapter actually has the fight. Like, the trial by combat happens in that chapter as well. As so just kind of interesting the way George.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ultimately decided to split it up compared to the way the show does, where it's like, obviously, I think I'm pretty sure I'd have to, it's been a while since I've seen it, but, you know, like the end of an episode where it's like, I demand a trial by combat. Probably, I mean, top five moments in the show, right?
Yeah.
I will say, like, Oberyn Martell, does he come off as cool in the books? Because, like, in the show, we get like a whole season of building him up into being somebody cool, where it's like, here's, we have like our one conversation with him, and then he comes in again, and then he fights and loses. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's kind of hard to like really be like, oh man, Oberyn Martell is such a badass. I mean, like,
it is tough though, because he gets like this reputation and aura around him just being on the page a little bit. Like, forget the show for a sec. I mean, he's just around a little bit, but I think Oberyn Martell is like one of the more compelling characters.
Oh, certainly. I mean, I think he is, but I guess like
he's going to get one
of those. It's one of those things when like when you as you go back through the books and you're kind of like, oh, yeah, you know, like,
yeah,
it's like Joffrey. Joffrey's barely on page.
Yeah. Right? Comparative to the show.
Right.
Yeah, and the show. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, so they definitely did so much better of a job like building him up. Jaime Lannister as well, up until this book is, you know,
barely
on page. But I agree. I do think it's a, you know, it's a very cool chapter, and you get this, like, so Tyrion is going into the whole, like, that's what makes the next Tyrion chapter so interesting, because he knows that Oberyn's saying, I'll be my champion, right? So when he's going in, right, like that, I think that's something like I never really thought about that angle, as when he goes into the trial again and Shay comes out. Now he could sit there and try to like defend himself in the trial, but you know the entire time he's just like, nope, I don't, like, I've got Oberyn Martell and he's gonna take the mountain and it doesn't matter.
And also the mountain is kind of this like we're not sure how capable this monstrosity actually is. I mean, it looks imposing, but I don't know.
The one fight we see of him and the Hound are going blow for blow.
Yeah, exactly. And now he's like this undead thing. Like, well, I'm sorry, that's
post. Not yet.
So, yeah, I'm actually considering him being the champion for Cersei now that I'm thinking, like, she, the second one with the faith,
right.
Which could be Clegane, ironically. Right. It could be end up being Sandor. But yeah, I think that Oberyn's reputation kind of precedes him, and I'm sure Tyrion's feeling pretty good about it overall.
Yeah. No, I would be too. I mean, he's the Viper. I mean, he's like a legit, I mean, would you rather have Bronn or would you rather have Oberyn Martell?
Oh, Oberyn Martell.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Hands down. You have a guy who flat out wants revenge.
Though Bronn's 1-0
on the mountain. Bronn is
one. He's on a heater.
Bronn is 1-0. Yeah, and then he obviously also thinks, you know, and that is a show only thing too, right? Where he says, doesn't he ask Jaime? I think in the show he does.
I think he does. I think, I can't remember though; it's been so long.
I think he does. I think they have a conversation where he asks Jaime, and Jaime's like, "Yeah, dude, I can't fight anymore."
Oh, that's right, because of his hand.
Right, and I think that's what sets up,
which is actually kind of a cool addition if you think about it.
It is, because that is something he would think of, and
sure. You know,
yeah, and he can't do it.
Also,
I think that's one of the reasons, because in the books, Jaime trains with Ilyn Payne when he starts to learn fight, so starts to fighting again. Whereas in the show, he's training with Bronn.
Yeah, yeah.
So I need to go back and really watch it,
dude.
But I think that this is like that kind of little, which is like, for as much, you know, as we criticize. Like, obviously, like when we think of the show, often it's like straight to season 7, season 8, but this was prime Game of Thrones. Like, there are a lot of cool little, like, oh, you know, like this, you could, we're going to go this way. Let's
changes,
tie
yeah.
this in.
Adaptations. Yeah.
Right. Which, of course, George apparently freaking hates anything being
adapted. Yeah. I mean, that's the general book author. Not all of them are like that, but he definitely is. Right. Can we play a what if game, though?
Yeah.
Dude, what if, removed hand and all, Jaime does step up to be Tyrion's champion in this moment of friction with Cersei
and wins,
dude. And but what if the mountain killed Jaime?
Yeah,
dude, that would be bananas.
Well, I think that's what makes that moment in season 7, right? Is it season? I think it's season 7. Actually, kind of interesting. Remember where the mountain steps in front of Jaime?
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
And that's kind of where Jamie's like, all right, well, I'm going to go ride to Winterfell now. Like, I'm done with Cersei.
Dude, I'm just thinking about that scenario. Could you imagine how shocked we've been as readers Jamie died?
Yeah, that would be.
Oh, I would. I prefer the way it's written, but I'm just saying, if you think about it, or if Jamie ends up winning and
but
then
Oberyn fits. Oberyn definitely fits into George, well, the way George yeah. writes. Which yeah. I think is why young Griff is very also likely to not be anything, is he always introduces somebody who's like stars, like, oh man, look how bright this is getting. Like, even
there's another Martell. There's another Martell.
Right. But it's like, look at Rob, right? Like, Rob is like, okay, he's there and stuff like that. And then Ned Stark gets, you know, killed mm-hmm. and kidnapped. Now it's like, Rob's there. You're like, okay, well, let's go with Rob. Nope. Right. And he does it on both sides.
Let's too, go with right? John. Nope.
Yeah. Well, to some degree. Right. And so every time you think this person's going to be the thing, it's not. Yeah. I mean, there's always somebody else out there. And on the, and he does it on the flip side too. I mean, even in the, you know, like the show turns Ramsay into something more obviously than he'll be, but you know, it's Joffrey. And then even yeah. now, and George is setting it up probably to be Euron.
Well, yeah. In some ways, you could even say Roose Bolton to Ramsay.
Sure. Yeah. Right?
So, and certainly Tywin came in like a house of fire, but he's going to leave on the shitter. He's going to be dead here soon in the book, and who will replace him? But kind of a mad queen in Cersei, certainly. I love the way George does this though, because not only is Oberyn Martell, you know, a cool character, gets introduced, has this crazy death, but it also reminds us of the history of why we're where we are with exactly what happened to those two children and who ordered that. In the next book, it's not a coincidence that we get a Dorne book, essentially. I mean, a good portion of the book is just Dorne. And that is one of the reasons why I think the way it's done in the show is so poor. I don't think that
the Dorne, nobody's going to disagree outside of season 8 that the Dorne angle was the big, like, the worst part of Game of Thrones.
And you could say that maybe some of those small changes aided in the failure of that. I would say it's more the Jaime and Bronn obsession that they had.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't really get it. I guess Bronn did really good ratings, they said, but I never was like over the moon about Bronn. Were you? Even in the books, like I'm not.
He was a fun character. He's fine.
Yeah. He pretty good comedic relief, a good actor. I'm not saying he's a bad actor, but I never was like, dude, I can't wait to watch this week's episode to watch Bronn. That never happened. Right.
That's why him in season 8 was like, so there's just like random. She like shows up with a crossbow. Yeah. It's like, I'm going to, you owe me money. Like what? Like, dude, like, I mean, talk about like, just like random, what like scenes that made no sense, you know, like, and then he's just on the council, I think at the end. I don't know.
It's so dumb. But, you know, that was a change. So I can understand why George gets a little pissy about this stuff, but Oberyn Martell was definitely kind of the prologue to the Dorne arc that we're going to be seeing, hopefully in Winds of Winter continued, that starts in Feast for Crows. So,
I mean, this is really kind of it for Oberyn, which is crazy. It's like this, and then, you know, the next chapter, and like that's it. Yeah, he barely
gives the big speech, you know, like you raped, you killed, you tortured, you know, and then just dies. George pretty is so much. Brutal, man.
So brutal. And you think, oh man, here we go. Here's this guy. It's gonna be so. But it is such a huge part of the story and setting up Dorne, like you said, because now they all hate the Lannisters even more.
Oh yeah, I mean this. But here's the problem, and this is another reason why George is clever, is it should have been all out war, right? Except it was done in a very formal setting.
So, like, what if, you know, and, like, looking at this chapter and then you're taking some of the things and this and, of course, the next chapter, because they really go together, and, like, looking forward, because you think about the, you know, where could we go and how does this lead us into Winds of Winter? Mm-hmm. You know, here Oberyn talks about, well, maybe we'll put Marcella on the throne. Right, because there is somebody we have to think about, because if Daenerys comes over and she tries to ally herself with Dorne, mm-hmm. is Marcella gonna be for it? Like, do we just assume that Marcella is going to be killed off by
she's
the
also disfigured at this point, right,
by the Sand Snakes,
right? Am I wrong? I'm having trouble remembering now. It's been a minute.
Marcella, the last thing that she gets her ear cut off by Darkstar,
right? So,
but I don't think she's like dismembered. I think she just has like her ear cut off.
Yeah, but I mean, the people of Westeros will judge any royal person for any disfigurement they might have. I was gonna say she looks maybe a little bit more like her uncle Tyrion now than she does her mother, but yeah, Marcella's a weird one. I don't necessarily think that she's just going to die. That would be a pretty cool character arc, though, you know, to see Marcella kind of do this coming of age as she's been forgotten about behind her brothers.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think. So let me just pull up her blurb to see exactly all of the things that are going on. Obviously, Jaime is thinking about when he meets Marcella again, he needs to tell her the truth. of her thing and then during her imprisonment, and then Cersei's learns about the attack and Kevin Lannister, you know, and they blame Darkstar, but that's really kind of it. But there's not a ton about it. So I think maybe she's gonna survive.
Yeah, and I like the idea of,
because they already tried to kill her. I think that is already the thing, is that they tried to kill her and they didn't do it, and that's gonna cause more turmoil, because it's I mean, if you're George and you're trying to write this going forward, think about this. If, like, we think Daenerys is going to come over and probably ally herself with Dorne, because if young Griff, if he goes to Sansa or Cersei, you know, we don't know where young Griff's ultimately going to go.
There's one big thing here though, Matt, that we're forgetting about is that all three of her children are supposed to die with golden shrouds.
So
Marcella probably is going to die.
Oh, that's true.
How much cooler would it be if it was like a Tom and Marcella war? I don't think there's enough time for that. And I think Tommen probably will end up dying. However, everyone's going to die. King's Landing, right. Whether it's a scepter bait, whatever it is. But Marcella being raised up as, like, you know, the rightful heir by Dornish. You could see almost like a little mini rebellion, I guess you would say, a coup. I think Marcella has to die. It's kind of sad,
but it's just how do you do it though?
Well, you can do anything really.
Do you just do it? I don't think it's, you can't do it the same way.
I'd hate to say this, but she could die off page.
That seems like pretty significant.
It does, but at the same time, like, what's your favorite Marcella dialogue line? You know what I mean? Like, I don't got one. I don't have one. She's the Rickon of the Lannisters.
In the books, yeah, she doesn't have a lot. But it just creates, there's so many things you could do.
There's a lot of potential. I love the idea of her being like,
I mean, George is going to do something with her, obviously. But yeah. I find it hard to believe that he would have, like, why not have Darkstar kill her?
It's a good question.
Why would you have Darkstar maim her? The only thing that does is create more dissent in Dorne.
Yeah.
Like, hey, man, we shouldn't be. She's our prisoner. She's our ward. She could be the heir. You're going to maim her and then kill her? I mean, that is George, you know, I guess. But
I would say I would not expect anything to be a given with him. But I also think that there's a chance that, what if Cersei just believes her to be dead? Does that fulfill the prophecy? And obviously, the prophecies don't have to happen or happen literally. Like, there's a lot of play with prophecy in A Song of Ice Fire. So I'm just leaning towards the idea of Marcella being dead, or at least I would say Cersei believing her to be dead.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let me pull up a couple lines from this chapter here, which, I mean, again, there's a lot of cool stuff, but man, this is one of those chapters that just has so many different, I mean, Kevin Lannister is in this chapter, right?
I love Kevin Lannister.
You know, he says, you know, Tyrion, Sir Kevin Lannister said wearily, "If you are indeed innocent of Joffrey's death, you should have no difficulty proving it at trial." Tyrion turned from the window. "Who is to judge me?" Which is a great line, by the way, because the way this chapter ends is Oberyn says, "You," Tyrion studied him, "you are one judge in three. How could you save me? Not as your judge, as your champion," which is like one of the coolest, like,
such a banger
ending lines. So it's just, again, it's another one of these where you start off, boom, and then he ends the chapter exactly with it. "Justice belongs to the throne. The king is dead, but your father remains hand. Since it is his own son who stands accused and his grandson who is the victim, he has asked Lord Tyrell and Prince Oberyn to sit in judgment with them." You know, and then he thinks a little bit about some of these people, but does Cersei have witnesses against me? You know, more every day that I must have witnessed, that I must have witnesses of my own. And then he says, "You ask me who you want and I'll bring him to the trial." And I mean, they're setting Tyrion up ultimately.
Yeah. Yeah. He's cooked.
Yeah. Yeah. Tywin, it is this whole Tyrion trial, to be fair, is also like a master stroke, and I think it shows you how well Tywin is able to adapt to things. I think that's like of all of the stuff that happens in with Tyrion is like this whole thing unfolds. I hit my mic there. Sorry for the people listening. this whole thing unfolds, right? I mean, like you're Tywin Lannister. Okay, you've just come back from battling Robb Stark. You've taken Robb Stark out. You've saved the city from Stannis. You're finally here and ready to rule, and the king dies.
Yeah.
And now you get and like your son lost his hand. Okay. So I think if you're Tywin, he's like, all right, I'm going to force Jaime out of the Kingsguard and force him to marry somebody. And I can do that now. And now I can get rid of Tyrion. I can send him to the wall. I can do whatever I want with him. I mean, he does adapt to this situation pretty well.
Yeah, he does. I mean, Tywin's a master of the game. In fact, I would say that the only big fault that ends up costing Tywin his place in the Game of Thrones is how bad of a dad he is.
Right.
And he's a good player of the game because he's a bad dad.
Right.
Kind of how Ned Stark was a good father, and it probably ended up costing him. It's a fickle game, the Game of Thrones. But Tywin's a master of manipulation when it comes to this. I know some people look in retrospect and say this was dumb, that was dumb. But on the whole, I mean, he's moving way above everyone else.
Because I've definitely seen theories where people are talking about it. They think, oh, was Tywin in on it? Like, did Tywin know that Joffrey was gonna?
I don't think so.
And I think all of the piece, I think that's what makes him even more cool as a character is of course, it ultimately backfires literally on him.
Yeah.
Because like you said, Tyrion comes in and kills him, but you just get to see how quickly he adapts to this whole thing, which I think it just shows how much of a master of the Game of Thrones he is.
And also this is a character that's been pitched as kind of operating above even someone like Tyrion, who we consider to be a pretty smart character. It kind of shows that George is actually able to write smart characters, not just say they are smart characters. Mm-hmm. In fact, George does the inflection of this and has Cersei thinking she is so smart while she's actually just blundering the entire time in Feast for Crows. So he's really good at this stuff. Another thing you have to think about, Matt, is so if you're reading this for the very first time and you stopped right here at this chapter, and I said, well, what do you think is going to happen to Tyrion? Like, what's your best guess? You would probably either say Oberyn's going to win and then they're still going to send him to the wall, or he's going to get sent. Oberyn loses and he gets sent to the wall. And you would think that because Tyrion had an experience earlier on the books at the wall, like George is presenting you these really, I would say, logical places for Tyrion's arc to go, because he's not going to die, right? There's no way he could die. If I told you, oh yeah, he ends up getting exiled to Essos after killing his dad on the shitter,
right?
Like, you would be like, what? And it still makes sense. Like, this is why, like, George is so good at the swerve. He sets up all these angles that are all realistic and make sense,
right?
And then goes somewhere completely different that somehow ends up being better.
Right.
So it's like, the wall is kind of interesting, but
right. It's and I'm not good at creative writing at all. I even took a creative writing class in high school and I was terrible at it. And so anyway, I remember this South Park clip, where Matt Stone and Trey Parker were talking about writing yeah. episodes. And they said, you know, if you tell a story, like, you have to go like this. He's like, if your story is, and then this happens, it's not a good story. If your story goes, but then this happens, you've got a good story. Mm-hmm. And so that's what happens here, right? It's like Tyrion is going to get sent to the wall, but then Varys helps him escape. Oh, but then he doesn't just escape like Varys wants. He goes and kills his dad.
Yeah.
But then
it's so absurd. Like,
instead of just escaping, he runs into Jaime.
It's Jaime just constant escalation, dude.
Yeah, and Jaime tries to have an honest conversation with Tyrion, but then Tyrion lies about Moon Boy fucking Cersei. Like,
bro,
you know what I mean?
Like, it's like the firework display at 4th of July when you think it's over and they start them again. You're like, oh, are they going to be able to top that last one? And then they do go even bigger. And you're like, geez, yeah. How many more fireworks do you have on that boat? You know, it's same thing. He just, he's very good at escalation. Very, very good at it.
So good. And so this whole trial, by the way, is just so rigged against Tyrion. Obviously, you know, there's witnesses against you. We'll hear them first. And he's, you know, everybody that comes up. And it's so easy to blame Tyrion for all of this, which I think is one of those things, and I can't remember actually if this line is in the books or not, because I haven't reread that chapter in a while, but in the show where Varys tells Tyrion, he's like, you know, no one will remember. Or I guess it was, you know, when he woke up, it was earlier when he woke up, right? And he got injured, but it still kind of hits hard here. It's like Tyrion did save King's Landing.
Yeah, he did.
But nobody's going to give him the credit for it.
Yeah. And
he did. Sir, he did quite literally save King's Landing from Stannis.
But and Tyrion gets a nice little golf clap from his dad while also being chastised.
Right. Which is something he does. Tyrion brings it up in the trial.
Oh, yeah.
I saved you from all these people.
Yeah. I'll be the monster you all think of me. Oh, God. So good.
So good. So good.
You go, dude.
So phenomenal.
I love
Tyrion. Okay. So we already talked a little bit about the last thing. So, yeah, I mean, anything else we want to talk about with this chapter, Jimmy?
No, I don't think so. I think I'm just ready for Tywin to get shot by a crossbow while taking a poop.
Okay, well, let's see. Where are we at next time? Did I update that?
Jamie, yes, 8. I did.
67. So, all right. With that, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 67, Jamie 8.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee.podcast.com.
We will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.